Oh my god, an insane goal!
The game's gone mad.
Hello and welcome back to The Game's Gone Mad. It's me, Patrick Van Straten, and we've got a brand new lineup for you this week. But before we get into that, I've got to hit you with some news. Unfortunately, The Game's Gone Mad is going to end in early November, but there is some positive news too. Sunday Vibes Extra Time is going to absorb us into them, and we will go weekly over there. So it won't disappear entirely. Every other episode of Sunday Vibes Extra Time will be in the format of The Game's Gone Mad, keep you updated on stories from around the global game. So make sure you're subscribed to Sunday Vibes Extra Time, and we'll see you over there.
The Game's Gone Mad.
So my guests this week are Mike Atkins. Hello, Mike.
Good afternoon, Pat.
Hi, and we've got George Wright as well.
Hello.
And George is here for a very special reason today, because we're talking about Arsenal and how dreadful they are. Now, Arsenal lost 1-0 away to Sheffield in what some people, i.e. me, are calling the worst game of football ever played.
Mm-hmm. Big statement.
Did you watch it?
I did, actually. It's the first time I've watched 90 minutes of Arsenal this season.
And was it the worst football you've ever seen in your life?
I'm a West Ham fan, Pat.
Fair point. But I thought it was pretty embarrassing. Arsenal can't attack or choose not to attack. Sheffield United can't attack, even though they want to attack. Ended in a 1-0 win for Sheffield, thanks to a Lys Mousset strike following a corner. Game ended with 0.9 XG for Sheffield and 0.95 for Arsenal. A real barnstormer. But 1.26 of that total of 1.85 XG came from just two chances. One was the Mousset goal, and the other was Nicolas Pepe's 20th minute miss following an excellent attacking move, the only one of the game.
Jesus.
It was pretty humiliating to watch this match. Only Pepe, John Fleck and Granit Xhaka had more than one shot in this game. John Fleck's a midfielder.
What a trio.
In case you've never heard
of
him.
John Fleck was minus 10 potential in Old FM once for Rangers. So.
Minus 10 potential. What does that mean? That he's going to get worse?
He could literally be one of the best players of all time.
West Ham wanted to sign him in January for about 4 million.
Yeah. And well,
that's the level you're up against.
Now look at him now.
He's going to get a Ballon d'Or probably next year, given the caliber you need to get onto that shortlist. Anyway, all the other forwards were utterly anonymous. There were 17 total shots in the game, which actually, positive news for Arsenal, because we're averaging 16 shots conceded per match. So in this game, we had half of the shots.
Great.
Good news for us.
Yeah.
On the up.
We are improving.
Back on top, as Shkodran Mustafi would bleat out from his stupid cuboid melon head. George, how are you feeling about Arsenal right now?
It might be the worst it's ever been in 25 years of
lifetime.
Supporting a club. Yeah. Like, towards the end of Arsene Wenger's reign, like, we were absolutely rubbish. It was so, so bad. But at least, like, you know, it's Arsene Wenger. He's, like, our greatest manager in the club's history.
Yeah.
He has that on his shoulders. Like, people are going to be more sympathetic to him. With this clown we've got in charge now, who is... Oh my, I can't even put into words how bad he is. I'm going to sound like someone from Arsenal Fan TV. This is how bad it's going to be. And it's just, I don't think I've ever watched a season, well, one and a half seasons so far of absolutely rubbish performances week in, week out. I can count on one hand how many genuinely good performances we've had in the Premier League. Europa League, we've been great, but that's just because we're playing absolute rubbish and we're playing our kids. But in the Premier League, what, Fulham, when we beat them like 5-1? When we beat Chelsea 2-0, apart from that, well, that was the last good performance, and that was in, what, January?
Yeah.
Last year?
It's rank.
And I think that if, for people who don't watch Arsenal or are not fans of Arsenal, they see where we were on the table and thought, oh, they must be doing all right. No, it's the worst it's ever been. We are so bad, we're clueless, and if we didn't have Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, we would literally be about 15th.
Yeah, Aubameyang's got 7 of our 13 goals so far this season, and this to me is the bigger issue, right? Like, the defence was bad under Wenger. The defence is still bad. Actually, it's worse, despite us spending some money on it. But at least under Wenger, yes, we would have games where we were totally toothless and couldn't break through, but generally speaking, the attack was pretty decent. But in 9 league matches this season, we failed to produce over 1.5 XG in 6 of them. The only games where we've actually managed to get more than that, Man United, Tottenham and Villa, where we were down to 10 men. So it's like when we are down, when the chips are down and we've got nothing to lose because we were behind in the United game, behind in the Spurs game, behind in the Villa game, we are capable of going and attacking. But 90% of the time, it's just like a bunch of guys behind the ball. Like, there were so many parts of this game where we were trying to play out from the back and there was no urgency.
No.
I don't have an issue with playing out from the back, but it's weird when you know it's just going to go to Socrates, to Luiz, to Leno, to one of the fullbacks, back to Leno.
Maybe
when you're a goal down.
If we're lucky, it'll go to Xhaka, then back to Leno as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. That's the pinnacle of excitement. What did you think as a neutral watching Arsenal?
I actually thought Arsenal played okay. I didn't think they were... No, I didn't
think they... Defensively, we were actually all right.
Yeah, I mean... Like, David Luiz is... I know he gets a lot of flack just because he's David Luiz, but he's genuinely our best centre-half. I think Holding... Like, yeah, I love Holding. He's great. He's a great player. But when someone's injured for that long, you overrate him.
Sure.
And I think David Luiz is generally our best centre-half, and he was solid all game. And I think apart from a Liverpool game and maybe one other, he's been our best defender by a mile.
Yeah.
I think when you were attacking, you were looking... It was there. It looked like it was there, and that you're just like one little step away from actually creating a chance. But as you were saying, like when you get to the last 20 minutes, the last 50 minutes, and you're 1-0 down, and you see like Pepe going through the middle, and then your best striker out on the left wing. I don't see what the plan is. I don't see how
it was just
how you're meant
to
get
box, right?
These players. Like Aubameyang's arguably best striker in the league, best out and out finisher in the league. But he's not. He's not in the box.
But he's crossing balls in the box to Gabriel Martinelli.
And Aubameyang's got 7 goals, and yet Arsenal's attack is rated as the 8th best in the league by expected goals. Like StatsBomb are a little bit kinder; they rate it 6th best in the league. But you've got one of the best strikers. You spent 70 million on a forward. Like Lacazette's been injured. Yes, you've also decided that you just don't need Mesut Ozil. And
that's just going to bring that on.
To me, the biggest issue in the squad right now. I don't know if you guys would agree with it, but the biggest issue is the midfield balance.
Yeah.
Because if you get the midfield balance right, the defence looks better and the attack looks better.
Yeah, the defence has looked so shaky because they're constantly ran at every single game for 90 minutes. Like, the Burnley game, there was no midfield. It was literally just Barnes and Chris Wood just running at Socrates and David Luiz. And if someone runs at you for that long freely, you're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And when you've got an error-prone, David Luiz is usually error-prone, didn't give away a penalty for Chelsea in, 160 games, could... give away 3 in his first 4 appearances for Arsenal. These errors are going to happen. I mean, you've got Socrates, who's slow, clumsy, and has got like 2 left feet. You're not going to... It's so frustrating because it's so easy to fix.
Yes.
I think the thing you were saying about the midfield as well is you could almost forgive Emery if he was playing the best 3 midfielders.
Yes.
And
exactly.
Even if there's no balance and you're playing...
Torreira, Guendouzi, Ceballos.
Or even Torreira, Guendouzi, Ozil.
Yeah,
as your 3.
Or Willock.
But it just doesn't make sense that he's not playing the best 3, but then there's no sort of, as you say, balance from... Like, he's playing in the wrong position. Like, Torreira is playing in, like, a box-to-box attacking midfield.
I have no idea what he's doing with that.
He's not that.
The most worrying thing this morning, well, I think it was this morning or yesterday's press conference notes, he was saying, I want to sign Fabinho. And it's like, great, we want to sign one of the world's best defensive midfielders. Shock. But the problem is that we've got Torreira on the bench every single game.
Yeah.
And is it just because he's short that he doesn't get into side? I think he genuinely wanted Steven Nzonzi, which absolutely frightens me.
And Fabinho has been great, but Fabinho's three years older, maybe 4 years older than Torreira.
Yeah.
And Torreira is still rated as one of the best young defensive midfielders in the world. Like, maybe he never gets that level, but maybe he does. Like, and at the very least, he's probably going to be a Champions League level defensive midfielder because that's what he looked like at his best last season.
I think... George, you might have said this in the last few weeks or something, but the reason Arsenal look so good in Europa League is because Emery's playing the players out of position. But by playing them out of position, he's actually playing them in their
the right
positions.
Yeah. He's like, okay, right, Torreira, you'll play defensive midfield because you're the most senior midfielder here because I'm playing like Willock and like Maitland-Niles in midfield or something. But as a result, like, it actually looks a lot more balanced. Like, I think that the midfield, when you play a midfield 3, needs to have one guy whose job is out and out defence, another link player, and then a guy who's going to get forward more.
Yeah.
And the guy who's going to get forward more probably needs to be Willock or Ozil, really, because those are the guys, or maybe Smith Rowe when he comes back.
Can I say that's just also mental that at this stage you're saying we have to play Willock or Ozil when Ozil's clearly probably still, except for maybe Aubameyang,
but
your best player in your squad.
But if he's going to like leave Ozil out for whatever reason it is, then I'm saying basically he has to play Willock.
Yeah.
But he clearly thinks Ceballos is more of a 10. Guendouzi and Torreira are more like box to box players. And defensive midfielders, he's only got Xhaka. And I just don't understand. Like, there's no place for Xhaka in a team which has Luiz, which has Guendouzi. Like, what is he going to do? And it seems so strange in this game that, like, we were down a goal going into the second half, and he already had Xhaka, Guendouzi, and Willock on the field. And rather than say, you know what, we obviously need the more attacking player, but maybe we don't need Xhaka, or maybe we don't need Guendouzi because, you know, there's not going to be so much pressure because we're going to have most of the ball. he decided to take off Willock and put on Ceballos. And he still thinks Ceballos is going to play as a 10, but he isn't. So then what you've got are three guys. You've got no defensive midfielder in those three, though Ceballos can play as a defensive midfielder. He didn't. You've got no 10 in those three. You've just got three central midfielders who all want to get on the ball from deep and spray it out wide. And so the ball kept going into the wide areas for Kolasinac to swing in across or for Aubameyang to swing in across. And you're just like, what are we doing? Like Pepe's miss is bad. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to pretend it isn't. But Pepe clearly was our best player on the day, was our most dangerous player. He was a bit quiet in the second half, but that's partially because he was so often dropping deep in order to dribble past people. But then he's got no one to combine with.
What have you made of Pepe, sort of both of you, what have you made of Pepe so far this season? Because obviously he came in for that record fee, but his numbers aren't backing up his fee as you'd expect him to do at this stage.
Personally, I think he's a really good player. Like, I mean, all you need to do is watch him like glide the ball. And he looks a bit clumsy sometimes. I think pressure gets to him. He's pretty low on confidence as well. But I think last season, like 21 of his 22 league and goals came with his left foot. So he's very hesitant. Like if he took that shot, if he took a tap-in with his right, if he had a bit more confidence, it would have been a rarity anyway. But
It did look odd the way he went for that chance with his left foot.
You can just see the way he is on the ball,
the way
he links up with the other players is just, he's a great player. Like the Jovinho comparisons are funny. Like it's obviously like a natural thing to compare it to, but because he does sometimes, he looks a bit like he doesn't know what he's doing. But like even when he missed that chance, he was the one who started that attack by like some mazy dribble from like he had no right to get out of that position in the first place, and he's
so rarely loses it as well. Like when you so often see him receiving the ball and you see a player coming in from behind, you're like, he's about to get tackled, and then he takes one touch. There was another one in this game, like the one against Burnley, where a player ran in behind him and he took a touch and then I think megged him or just went past him, like, and two guys were out of the game like that. And he's so good at doing that. But to me, he is, I've said it so many times, but he's exactly like Alexis. Like, he wants to cut inside and shoot, or he wants to float a ball to the back post when he's got no options on. If he has nobody to combine with, he's incredibly frustrating because he basically dribbles until he loses it. But like Alexis, he's really dependent on having a wing back go outside him or having somebody inside like Ozil to combine with. And when he doesn't have those things, you so often see him looking around and thinking, what am
I going to do this myself?
Yeah, if you had him last season when you had like Ozil and Ramsey playing a little bit more and Bellerin playing, I think you would see like a really dangerous play. I'm actually really positive about him. Like, his raw numbers are good. He's got 3.5 shots a game, 2 key passes, over 4 dribbles. And we had nobody who could dribble last season. And his expected goals, I think he's about 0.6 expected goals and assists per 90, which is pretty good. So I'm definitely positive about him. I mean, he's not among my concerns.
No, definitely not. I mean, the biggest concern is the clown in the dugout who should definitely leave. Please, just go to Leganes at your level. Stop trying to make us into Sevilla 2.0, because Sevilla are rubbish.
What do you think Arsenal's chances are for the top four? Because right now, obviously, two places are nailed on, but it kind of looks like Chelsea are really securing that third spot, which leaves fourth for Arsenal, Spurs, Leicester and Man United to compete for. I think Man United are basically out of it.
Yeah,
I can't see Man United getting it.
I think United would finish sixth.
I'd be surprised if Leicester got it, to be honest with you, because as good as they've looked, they've had the run of the green so far results-wise. Like, their results have been a bit better than their performances, and that suggests to me that unless they change a bit tactically or Barnes explodes over the back half of the season, plus they're very susceptible to an injury.
Yeah.
So, Arsenal, Spurs?
I do... Like, it might sound a bit biased. I think even with this idiot in charge, I think we can still finish fourth. I think Spurs is...
You don't think Spurs are going to rescue
this? No. I think Spurs' dressing room won't recover until after summer, or at least after January, because you've got so many players. You've got, I think, Alderweireld, Vertonghen, Eriksen out of contract next summer.
Right.
There's so much uncertainty at Spurs, where, whilst obviously you've got the uncertainty with Emery and Emery's future at Arsenal, in terms of the squad...
The harmony's quite good.
So we don't see any positives from Spurs battering of Red Star Belgrade. Like, I know Red Star Belgrade aren't good, but what was more encouraging for Spurs fans in that game wasn't so much that they beat them 5-0, but that they played coherently. Like, they were pressing.
Did Eriksen start in that game?
I don't think he did.
Because I think so.
There was Lamella. I'll have a look. It was Lamella, Kane, Son. I don't know, man.
Because maybe if Eriksen isn't a fixture of teamness anymore, it might actually be beneficial for him in the long term.
Well, plus Lo Celso is still to come back. And when those guys are back, they have a really clear hole at right back. But you still look at them and think, the talent's there. Unless they've quit on the manager, the talent's there and the manager's there for them to get top four.
Yeah, they played with Ndombele, Sissoko, Lamella, Ali, Sun, Kane.
Yeah, I think
Eriksen didn't even come off the bench.
Yeah. Still a pretty good team.
I think Eriksen, as talented as player is, he's probably the main issue in Spurs squad at the minute.
Really?
And he's the one causing, is the one with the unrest, because he's obviously the Vertonghen rumours, obviously probably not true. And also the fact he's out of contract in the summer. He publicly wanted to leave in the last
apparently
well.
He had agreed a deal to go to Real Madrid, but then backed out of that deal because of personal reasons.
If they get, because obviously Pochettino is the third best manager in the Premier League, you don't need anyone. You don't need to be a genius to work that out.
Yeah.
And you'd back him to fix this sooner rather than later, I think.
Sure.
He's got, apart from Eriksen, all the key players in that squad are on his side. So it will go down to what happens in January and the running. I think Chelsea, I remember the predictions podcast, and so the next time I said, I don't see where they're going to score goals. Now that prediction looks absolutely messed. It's absolutely... but they've still yet to go through, like, there's not been any real issues that Frank Lampard's had to go through yet. There's still not been a run of tough fixtures, like proper tough, like away games. And then
I don't think they're playing another big six side until the end of November.
Yeah, well, same with us as well,
really. Though they were good against Liverpool when they played them.
Yeah.
And they have had to deal with some injuries, like no Conte, no Rudiger. Obviously Emerson was playing really well, then got injured.
Yeah.
Aspi had a bad start to the season and has recovered. Now they've got CHO back, and of course they've got Loftus-Cheek still to come back as well.
It's like the feeling around Chelsea at the minute feels like no matter what happens, it's just the season's going to be a good ride,
yeah,
regardless of what happens.
Yeah,
and Frank,
because they're playing fun football.
Yeah,
as well.
And Frank Lampard is his tactical genius in the Championship, because he weren't really great, but it seems like almost a Dan-esque, where it's like, as long as you placate the players and give chances to these rare and young youth products, then they look fine, and they're more enjoyable to watch than Arsenal.
Yeah,
so.
I saw something recently that said that in the Abramovich era, this is actually the worst ever start by a permanent Chelsea manager.
Really?
Yeah, it is the most. Oh, it was a few weeks ago, so obviously extra points since then, but a few weeks ago. But yeah, it's the most excited you've seen Chelsea fans.
Yeah. That's the main
thing. In
the
last 15 years.
Like, with good reason as well.
Yeah, you can have a rubbish start, but if the football's good and the team harmony's good and all the fans have got that feel-good feeling, it makes any bad result hurt less. And it's easier to bounce back from that.
Yeah.
There's no like discontent in the stadium at all. Everyone's behind Lampard, and as long as they keep that energy, then who knows what might happen. They'll think they're probably guaranteed top four at this rate. And with the Salah Hazard and the 2-year season transfer ban, they could spend a lot of money in the summer.
Yeah, they could.
But and with Arsenal, you just don't have a clue.
Well, and plus as well, you know, like Arsenal have had some benefits even. You know, like Guendouzi has obviously taken a step forward this season.
Golden Boy nominee.
Yeah, Golden Boy nominee, and deservedly so, I think. And then Saka has arrived and obviously looks excellent. Like, looks like clearly a Premier League player already, and he's 18. Like, so those are benefits they've had, and yet there's still no fan goodwill. And I think that should really tell people, like, how dull it's been. Like, Arsenal are still in fifth, like, well within touching a distance of a Champions League spot.
Well, you won, you would have been third, right?
Well, yeah, but we really don't deserve to be where we are. We've been absolutely appalling. We've been worse than we were last season. And I read an article the other day that said, well, if Arsenal end up getting Champions League football at the end of the season, then there's been progress and they deserve, and Emery deserves another year. But I think that's nonsense. Like, very clearly, the team is not making progress. Even if we were to somehow luck into top four by being just like the fourth least bad team in the Prem, we still wouldn't deserve the Champions League, and we still wouldn't have made progress, because nobody knows how we want to play. Even still, the defence is worse than it was last season, I think.
Like, in Amy Lawrence, who's like obviously an Arsenal biographer, she's a journalist at The Athletic now, said like she's worried about Arsenal basically under Emery. It's like, if players don't know what they're doing under Emery, it's a worry.
Mm.
But if they do, and it's how they perform, it's also a worry.
Yeah, exactly.
I think ultimately, if Emery was to go, if he got sacked tomorrow, who's going to come in? Who's going to replace him?
I think Freddie Ljungberg would replace him.
They'd give it to Freddie Ljungberg, but they won't sack him.
No. The thing is,
it would have to get really bad, or it would have to get to a point in the season.
Yeah, what would have to happen for Emery to go?
I just don't think it would happen now. I don't think it would happen now. I think, to go before the end of the year, I think it would probably be in like March or April. It would be with very little of the season left. We'd have to be probably out of the Europa. We'd have to be out of the Europa League. And like miles adrift of the top four, I think.
Yeah. And out of all the domestic cups as well.
Yeah, if we're like within, say, 8 points of the top four, or we're still in the Europa League in March, they'll keep him to the end of the season. Yeah. But if they were to let him go, then they bring Ljungberg in. And at that point, it would be sensible to bring Ljungberg in. But I would probably sack him now and bring somebody else in for the season.
Yeah.
And then in the summer, I'd go for Marco Rosa or Erik ten Hag.
I mean, it's worth mentioning as well, like, out of the three-man crew appointed to Emery in the first place, you had Ivan Gazidis, you had Raul Sanley, and you had Sven Mislintat. Two of the three aren't there anymore. Edu is the one who's in charge of building Arsenal's identity, per se. And if he's going to, he's gone to every game, he's like, even with the fans after the game, if he's watching this and thinking, this is the Arsenal way, we're in deep trouble. Because there's been no encouraging signs from our play whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I think Tierney and Bellerin would be a big help if he plays them, because he said Kolasinac didn't deserve to be dropped, hasn't done anything to deserve to be dropped.
Mm.
And now he's in a cycle where if Tierney plays Thursdays, he's not going to play on the weekend because it's too much. So I don't know what's going to happen. But
the positive would be Tierney getting like either not starting in the Europa League tonight or getting like 45 minutes and then coming off.
Have you seen he's completed the most successful crosses for Arsenal this season?
I'm not surprised. Like, Tierney's obviously been excellent. And when you see our youth team, essentially, with a few seniors, play in the Europa League, play in the Cups, they've been amazing, like genuinely amazing. Like, everybody says, oh, well, it's just Forest, they're only a Championship side. They're a good Championship side. Oh, well, it's just like standard Liège, they're not good. Yeah, they're probably the worst side I've seen us play so far this season. But at the same time, we have lost to those teams in the past. We lost those teams under Wenger all the time. And these youth players look good. Martinelli is obviously, if you're good enough to win games in the Europa League with Martinelli up front, then Martinelli is going to be a good striker for us.
Sure.
If you're good enough, if Saka and Nelson and all these guys can contribute at that level, then we've got a rotation team sorted for the next few years. But currently the rotation team looks... I think that if you played the first team against the rotation team right now, there's not really a lot that the senior team has over it. Like, they have Aubameyang and they probably have Guendouzi.
It's like the only bright spot of being in Europa League for the last three seasons has been watching our youth team play in the group stages.
Yeah.
That's been, for the last 3 years, that's been my only bright point to any Arsenal season, is watching the likes of Reece Nelson and Saka break through and Smith Rowe. And compare that to we haven't won a Premier League game this season by more than one goal. And that is, for a top four aspiring club, that is absolutely horrific. Like, you need to be like Wenger.
We've played Burnley at home, we've played Bournemouth at home, we've played Newcastle away, we've played Sheffield United away, we've played Villa at home.
I mean, Wenger was terrible in his last two seasons, but you would back a Wenger side to batter them small teams by at least like three goals.
In his last season, when everyone was like, wow, Arsenal embarrassing and we couldn't win an away game, we beat like Everton 5-0 at home or something. Like, I think we had back-to-back 5-0 wins, didn't we?
Well, it's like in Wenger's last 47 games compared to Emery's first 47, Emery has a worse record in every department.
Yeah, fewer points, fewer goals, more goals against.
And this is with a much better squad. Miles better squad. And you just, you know, it's so bad when you kind of pine for a manager before who was absolutely rubbish. Like, that's the only way I can describe it. Because the thing of Emery, he's got, I mean, bless him, trying to speak English, he can't, because he just says a lot but actually says nothing. And at least he's trying. But, and even that thing with Ozil in a training ground, it's like, I don't know what he's trying to do. He knows the cameras are there. Why are you making a big deal out of it? Like, I think the Mesut Ozil thing, from my viewpoint, I don't think Mesut Ozil's player used to be. I think he should be playing against small teams at home, maybe, and in the Europa League and domestic cups, and that's it. I'm not under any illusions that he's still a world-class player. But I think that it's so stupid that he's not even in his squad. I mean, Sheffield United...
But he might still be great. Like, we literally have no way of knowing. He's not been in the team for, like, getting on for a year and a half.
I mean, this whole situation around Ozil is just absolute... It's just incomprehensible, really, when you look at a side that creates absolutely nothing going forward. And
has a bunch of defensive passengers anyway. Like, Pepe is a passenger in defence. Aubameyang doesn't do a huge amount. He does a bit. Xhaka does nothing. Like, you're telling me that you couldn't play Torreira in there to do the defensive work that Xhaka does plus Willock?
Yeah.
Like, play Torreira, play Guendouzi or Ceballos, and then play Ozil. There's no reason that can't work. And you say to Pepe, you're going to be dropped if you don't work harder. And it actually looked like maybe he had been told that before the Sheffield game, because he worked harder in that match than he had in any other.
It's... It's just, I feel like if you haven't if you don't support Arsenal, you haven't watched this, you don't realise how bad it is. And I feel like this is the first time in my whole life when Arsenal, my mum pelted me for it this morning. I said, the first time that I would take losing on Saturday to get Emery sacked. It's that bad.
Yeah,
it's gotten to that level. It's gotten to the level where Emery, if you support Unai Emery in charge, you actively want the worst in the club. it's got to that bad because there's nothing. There's no defence. There's no attack. There's no midfield. What is there? It's just a bunch of players running around for 90 minutes having no clue what they're supposed to do and just giving it to Kolasinac, who's been skying it every single cross.
Does it make it worse that over the summer, the owner or the son of the owner,
Josh Kroenke.
Behind the scenes, we're
the best we've ever been.
He said something like, oh, you fans better get excited for the upcoming season.
That was before we signed Nicola Pepe. And that was what he said.
I don't blame him, though, because after the window, fans were excited. Yeah. Fans were like, this is great.
That was our best transfer window in years. And given the squad, when you look at the squad, the front line of Pepe, Aubameyang and Lacazette. And in midfield, you've got Torreira, Guendouzi, Ceballos. Defence, David Luiz, sure, stopgap, but pretty good. And then Tierney and Bellerin.
Yeah, and we're leaving out players like Ozil there, by the way, and Saka, who's broken through, and Martinelli, who's landed on his feet.
Yeah.
Like, so many, there are so many reasons to be positive, and yet we're rubbish.
Here we are.
So, Emery, I think we're very firmly an Emery out podcast.
I can't see how anyone who watches Arsenal is any different.
I'm enjoying it, to be honest.
Like,
yeah, I'm sure you are, because we're actually the least entertaining football club in London now. Like, I would much rather watch West Ham, Chelsea, Spurs, because they're kind of funny right now. Probably watch Palace, because Palace can at least defend. So, I mean, it's pretty demoralising. But yeah, there we go. That was a nice positive segment to start the show on.
I hate Unai Emery.
The game's gone mad.
On to our headlines. And first up, we have PSG, who thumped Club Bruges 5-0 away from home to spark talk of them as Champions League contenders. Now, at the beginning of the season, I was quite high on them. I said that they were probably in... I think I said that they're in my third or fourth favourites after Liverpool, City, and we had no idea how good Barcelona would be, that kind of thing. But in this game, Kylian Mbappe came on in the 52nd minute and managed to get a hat-trick. Icardi got the other two. Obviously, Cavani's still there. Neymar to come back in. It looks like the club have the attack to tear up any opposition. And they're now on 9 points, 5 clear of Real Madrid at the top of Group A. They've scored 9, conceded 0. What do we think? Can they win the Champions League?
I think they can win the Champions League. But I've been saying this for the past few years. So I've always thought they've had the talent. Even before Neymar came in and they had Zlatan, who was maybe he was just like on the downwards part of his career.
He was pretty filthy, though.
But he was still absolutely mental, putting up all the numbers. I think that this year, with Neymar almost taking a bit of a sidestep, if you know what I mean, he's been out of the team since February. He came back in, he's been injured again, he's had the Champions League ban, that there's more to this team than Neymar. And without Neymar, they seem to be more of a team as well.
Sure.
Mbappe's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that he's 20 and he's already he's just so far above and beyond. Like, he'll probably be a Ballon d'Or winner within the next 2 years.
I think
he's sort of that level.
If PSG win a Champions League, he'll win the Ballon d'Or. Because there's only one person. Like, I absolutely love Neymar. I do think he's the third best player in the world, quite easily, in my opinion. But Mbappe is just that. It's rare you see someone like him.
It's so
odd watching him play and think, this guy's 20 and he's doing this.
Yeah.
It's like, even with, I don't really remember growing up watching Messi or Ronaldo that vividly. I don't remember watching like Messi's first few games, but watching Mbappe, it's like, this is another person you think, I grew up watching this guy play, kind of thing. And you're like, you look at him and you look at old tapes of R9 and you're like, before he was 21, was like, he won Ballon d'Or before he was 21, didn't he?
Yeah, really early.
And you just look at him and think, this is like him. This is him. He's back. he's been resurrected.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Mbappe's actually probably I don't know, really. Like, he's doing it at a higher level probably than Ronaldo back then. Though Ronaldo to me was like the more natural dribbler, which is weird to say because Mbappe's so good at dribbling. But like, it just seems like that squad is now really well balanced. I mean, they've scraped through a few games in the league, but even if you look at their league record, they've conceded 5 goals in 10 games. They've scored 21. They're 5 points clear at the top of Ligue 1. And the people who are behind them are like Nantes and Stade de Reims, who are not particularly like you're not really going to expect them to be long-term rivals. So it feels like the league's basically locked up, which means they can just devote resources to the Champions League.
It's absolutely crazy when it's like not even in the next year yet of the season, and they're already resting their first team players in league games.
They're already resting their first team players in Champions League games. Mbappe didn't even start the game.
It's just crazy.
Comes on, scores hat trick in half an hour.
Like, you can't really, obviously you can't judge anything from Ligue 1 because it's not good. It's not good. But when Neymar comes back, I do think he elevates him even further. And considering he's missed 50% of PSG's games since he's been there.
I mean, he's not even on the Ballon d'Or shortlist this year.
But Kevin De Bruyne is, though.
Oh, whatever.
But anyway.
But aren't there like seven Liverpool players in like the final 30? It's embarrassing. And I saw Liverpool fans complaining that like Robertson wasn't in there. Like, calm down. And Fabinho as well. So, Matkins, if PSG are not to win the Champions League, who will it be instead? Like, who do you place above them in the pecking order right now?
I don't think I would place anyone above them in the pecking order.
Hello.
Except maybe Manchester City. But Manchester City have at little times looked a little bit shaky in the Champions League. But PSG haven't shown any of that at all. But it's always the usual. You can never count out Barcelona.
Sure.
Liverpool, although they've been a bit shaky. I mean, I know they beat Genk 4-1 last night, but the first half was a questionable first half from them. Obviously, they lost to Napoli.
And gave up 3 goals at home to Salzburg.
Yeah. So there's all these questions. Although I did see that Jurgen Klopp's never lost a knockout tie with Liverpool. Ignoring finals, he's never lost a two-legged tie.
Jesus. I mean, that is crazy.
Yeah, I think Liverpool won it.
Yeah, I mean, if you made me bet right now, I'd probably bet. I don't know, actually.
So suited to Champions League football, though. Like, in the deep stages.
Yeah, but at the same time, last season, it did take a bit of luck for them to go through.
Yeah.
Like, they could easily have gone out to Barcelona.
I have said for, like, the last 3 seasons that Barcelona win it, and they haven't. So I'm just saying Liverpool win it now, so hopefully Barcelona do win it, because I just want Messi just to...
Yeah, just done. A final Champions
just
League.
Just done. Just win every Ballon d'Or for the next 30 years.
But I just want
60.
I'd rather he just won like a Copa America or something. And I just want Valverde out of Barcelona as soon as possible.
Get Wenger in.
Just wasting Messi's final years. But it just, I don't know, like PSG, like by adding Gay, obviously Gay's start to the season has been much publicised.
Yeah.
Absolutely tremendous, adding attacking power to what has always been incredible defensive intelligence. Then they've got Herrera,
Icardi,
who hasn't played that much. Icardi coming in to supplement the attack. Di Maria, who looks like he's
one of the best players in the world again.
Yeah, regained form of kind of 6 years ago, I suppose.
Something like
14 season.
15 goal involvements already this season.
And I mean, he's always been an incredible
attacking
passer.
He was involved in every
passer.
Goal the other night.
But he looks fitter as well. He looks faster. He looks like a bit hungry.
I was speaking to one of my mates and he was saying, we was talking about like players' peaks, and it's like, how old was he when he joined Man United? 26, 27?
He'd just been, I can't remember his age, but he'd just won the man of the match in the Champions League final.
And he had like, to obviously Man United sucks the life out of any decent player in the last 4 years. But it seems like it's not uncommon that a player dips when they're supposed to hit their prime, and then once they pass 30, they just rediscover that form. And I think Di Maria is a perfect example of that. Like, he looks fast, and he looks just as fast as when he won Man of the Match in the Champions League final, when he was Real Madrid's best player that season. And with him arguably a bench option when everyone's fit,
maybe,
but unless they play 3-man midfield with him in it.
Then they've got Draxler as well on the bench, like, obviously Verratti's there too. Oh god, there's so much talent in that team. So you think Liverpool win the Champions League if you had to bet?
If I had to bet my life on it right now, I'd say Liverpool.
Matkins, you say PSG?
I would take PSG.
I'm going to say Liverpool too. But let us know what you guys think. Hit us up on Twitter with your predictions for the Champions League. The game's gone mad. Our next headline, we have our finalists for the Copa Libertadores. The semi-finals were up this week. It was all Brazilian on one side, Flamengo versus Grêmio, and all Argentinian on the other, with River Plate versus Boca Juniors in a Super Clásico. They actually faced each other, of course, in the final last year in a Super Clásico. River came out on top, and they came out on top again. They lost 1-0 on Tuesday at the Bombonera, but advanced the final with a 2-1 aggregate win, while Flamengo, after drawing the first leg away at Grêmio, came out with a 5-0 victory last night to make their first final, I think, since 1981 when they won the competition.
Jorge Jesus absolutely tearing apart the Brazilian league and South America football.
Yeah, they're 10 points clear at the top of Serie A as well.
I've just finished writing about a script with Gabriel Barbosa in it who scored twice, and he, at 23, he's still got plenty of time to be the player he was. He's absolutely killed it.
He's got 35 goals this season in 47 games, Gabriel Barbosa, at 23.
Gabby Goal is back.
It's pretty exciting.
In Brazil, where he absolutely smashed it before he moved to Inter and then did nothing at Inter and nothing at Benfica.
Yeah, but he moved to Inter when he was 18, I think. And he's still only 23 now.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm firmly on the side of...
Firmly on the redemption
he can still
arc.
Become... Yeah, I'm still like, he can become potentially one of Europe's best strikers.
Yeah.
But history hasn't shown that so far. Maybe he did come to Europe too soon, but...
Yeah.
I mean, it's the trend now, isn't it? With all the Brazilian youngsters coming over as soon as they can.
Yeah.
So are you guys both rooting for Flamengo then? It would only be their second title ever. As I said, it would actually only be their second final ever. Because River Plate are kind of the favourites going into this. They won last year. They won in 2015. So if they were to win this year, it would be their third in five seasons, which is really quite amazing. Yeah. And it looks like it must be a matter of time until Gallardo gets a chance. At
yeah,
a
I know.
European
I was just about to say, like, same. He hasn't lost Boca Juniors in an important game. He's like in the game that actually mattered, he hasn't lost to him. And what he's done, at obviously our knowledge on South American football is quite limited. It's very hard to watch South American football.
Yeah.
But he's been linked with Barcelona, and he's very young. But he did say that unless a super project comes in, he has no desire to leave River Plate at all. So he literally could become the best South American manager of all time in that continent by the end of his time there.
He'll 100% leave.
Yeah, probably.
Because Real Madrid or Barca will just make it.
Oh yeah, Barcelona have been the big links. He's also been linked with some sort of smaller Italian clubs, sort of your Sampdorias and things like that. But Sampdoria, yeah, exactly. It's the sort of step you'd expect a manager like that to make. But if Gallardo's already saying, I'm not going to leave River unless I go to Barcelona, Real Madrid, Manchester United, whoever it is, then
yeah,
I have absolutely no bias in South American football whatsoever. Like, I just look at them and see, oh, they're in the final.
Yeah,
but I would quite like Flamengo to win it, just because of Jorge Jesus is absolutely crackers. And didn't he wasn't he part of, like, the Bella Gutmann curse? Didn't he get to a European final with Benfica and they lost?
Yeah.
So, you know, it'd be a bit nice. And he looks a bit like Manuel Pellegrini gone wrong. So.
Okay, well, fair enough. I mean, I guess I actually don't care who wins. Like, I think it would be good to see Gabriel Barbosa come back to Europe, though, because he clearly is a top-level forward. And I think River Plate are going to lose one of their best players as well. We expect Ezequiel Palacios to make a move probably in the January window. Mm. I don't know.
Gabriel Barbosa, he might actually make his move permanent to Flamengo. For €18 million, so.
Well, they have actually spent a lot of money. They, of course, brought in Gerson from
Roma.
Don't they,
Felipe Luis?
I don't know. I was looking at their squad this morning. I do not remember seeing him. But to be fair, all Brazilian/Portuguese names look exactly the same. Like, every club has got a keeper called Julio Cesar. That's not an exaggeration.
Oh, yeah. Whenever you're trying to,
Remy Ode.
Whenever you're trying to find the Julio Cesar on Wikipedia.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
You click through about six different goalkeepers before you find the one you actually want.
I did want to root for Gremio, though, because I think they have a midfielder who's just called Patrick.
Love it.
And I was like, he's got to be good. Like, there's no way, there are no two ways about it. But anyway, the final takes place in Chile on November the 23rd. So we do actually have quite a long time to wait for that particular fixture, but it should be a tremendous game. And I might actually watch it if I'm in Japan. So I'm not going
to
watch
it. I'm expecting it to kick off again.
Yeah.
Every South American final, whatever, is going to kick off.
Well, it went bonkers before this game. Yeah.
I mean, what I find interesting about this final is I think it's the first final where it's just a one-off game. Like last year...
Normally two legs,
yeah,
right?
Last year it was two legs. Yeah. And I think they're now setting it to a one-off game for the final. So it'd be interesting to see how teams adapt to that, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, because like last year the second leg was in Madrid, wasn't it? And I was speaking to a guy who did my tattoos from Bolivia. And he said it was absolutely disgrace that was in Madrid. Obviously, like Franco,
well, it is a bit
Francoist as well. Like far, yeah,
sure.
It's not great for people who colonized South America. But you know, but yeah, I might watch the highlights. Not going to commit to staying up to 2 o'clock in the morning to watch it. But you know,
well, there we go. Wow, everyone's so excited about the Copa Libertadores. We hope that some of you are more excited about it. It is technically one of the world's champions leagues. Like, it's a big fixture.
Get to see Liverpool play in a Club World Cup. That's all that matters.
I was about to say, it could could be the year that if River win it, I think it could be the year that South American side actually goes on to win the Club World Cup.
Ooh, it's a big claim. It's a big claim. Let's move on to anything but football.
The game's gone mad.
Okay, so anything but football. This week I've got a little mailbag rather than having a selection of topics. We were going to talk about Bake Off, but we're going to wait till after the final next week. It's silly to do it this week. So I've got a few quick questions. The first one comes from Hopper. What is the most overrated dessert?
Creme brulee.
Creme brulee. Interesting. Why?
Cream in it. Hate cream.
You hate cream?
Hate cream.
What's wrong
You're
with cream?
You're a madman. It's
What's
delicious.
What's cream ever done to you?
And it's got like a crispy, cracky top.
It's just weird. It's just, I'm just not a fan of creme brulee.
Interesting.
I think tiramisu.
Tiramisu is a great shout. Trifle, also garbage. Anything where you get sponge and soak it in a liquid so it turns into mush is rank. I've actually come round to Christmas pudding, which I always hated. Mm. But I've kind of come round to it. Fruitcake is trash.
Yeah, I'd agree
there
with
are
that.
Lot, there are lots
of fruit doing in a cake?
Anything with marzipan, bad. Marzipan is intrinsically awful.
Yeah, anything marzipan based, anything cream based, anything coffee based.
I'm not a huge dessert guy. I just like, I can have chocolate cake with cream and I'll be happy.
Yeah, I mean, given the choice between savoury and sweet, I always go savoury, but I do think that there is a time where you get a craving for sweet that nothing savoury can satisfy. Mm. Sometimes you just need some chocolate.
Or like a hot brownie is my favourite dessert. It's a hot gooey brownie of like ice cream.
Chocolate mousse, I like really good chocolate mousse. Like here it's mostly trash, but in France it's unreal. Yeah.
It's hard to find a sort of outstanding dessert, if you know what I mean. Whenever you go to restaurants, all the desserts are usually the same sort of thing. And
just give me
the
a 99.
Sort of level.
Yeah, I was going to say, like a 99 or a Magnum, which actually are still amazing. Or yeah, just like a sort of hot brownie-ish thing or cookie dough or something like some ice cream. That's about as good
sloppy.
That's as good as a pudding gets.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, we're moving on. On a similar topic, Maverick, the king in the north, he wants your three-course death row meal. We'll leave out puddings because we've kind of covered them. So I want a starter and I want a main. These don't need to go together. You know, so like you can have a mental starter and a weird main.
So go on, Mike.
I'm not sure about a starter, but I was actually having this discussion with my girlfriend very recently.
Go on.
For a main, just the dirtiest burger.
Yeah, I agree
just
with that.
Sort of a burger with absolutely everything in that you would ever want in a burger. So you got your various cheeses, your barbecue sauce, your bacon, your crispy onions, your even you know a little bit of avocado in there or something like that.
Whoa.
Just everything That's you could rude. Ever want in a burger, put it all in a burger.
A really good burger is so hard to beat, you know. Like it is. I mean, I've put fried chicken up there as well.
Yeah.
Like I mean, fried chicken's really good. Really, you know what? Really, really good, like adobo or something, or like carnitas. Like I really like Mexican food, so I could all pork belly as well is a shout for me. I want some form of potato as well. I want either roast potatoes or chips on the side. I like curly fries.
I was
I like
gonna say curly
fries
as
They're
well
all good.
Love curly fries,
crinkle cut fries. Ooh.
But when you see people have these sort of death row meals or you hear about them, they're sort of huge. It's not just one meal. It's literally whatever they want. So
you've got to delay it, though. You've got to eat as big a meal as possible so you've got the maximum time
to be alive.
To be pardoned.
or just piss them off. Order all the food and just don't touch it.
People do that. I've seen people do that in death row before.
What, just order the biggest food so they could keep eating?
Oh, just not eat it.
I mean, you were saying, Pat, that even the standard death row, like if you don't put in your death row order, you still get the pretty good meal.
There's a new photo album, I think, by a guy who recreated the last meals of like some famous executed American prisoners. So John Wayne Gacy, for example, you know. And one of them, I can't remember who it was one of the famous killers.
Mr. Brightside.
It might be like yeah, exactly. It was Brandon Flowers. He hadn't specified anything, so they gave him the default meal. And the default meal was a medium rare T-bone steak, eggs over easy, hash browns, toast with jam and butter, milk and juice. And I was like, that's an incredible meal. Like, if they just give that, they're like, oh, well, he hasn't specified anything. Let's give him the most expensive, complicated meal to cook of all time. Like, I thought that they'd just give him like a McDonald's or something if he hasn't specified. Or a pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would your meal be, George?
Right. I haven't thought long about this, but I have thought about it. So it would be like different dishes. So it'd be like tapas, but everything I like.
Okay.
So you'd have four wings from Morley's.
Okay.
So that's a staple. That is the first thing that came to my head.
Sure.
One saveloy.
Okay.
and a small and a small portion of chips.
Okay.
Like chip shop chips.
So I want to eat it all, but I'm not having too much of one thing. I'd have pie and mash with liquor.
Okay.
A small pie.
This
and
is the most
small,
London pie small, meal I've ever heard.
A small bit of mash. And I would have a bit of Turkish, like the, I forgot what it's called, like tavuk yogurtlu, where it's like the yogurt chicken in bread with like sauce that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I'd have this really hot meal from this place called Etler's near Walthamstow. And it's hot. It made my like head throb. It was so hot. My mind ascended from my brain. it was absolutely unbelievable.
I guess that's the
way you'd
want to go.
I'd have that
out
at the end, and then I wouldn't be able to feel anything. So it'd be perfect.
That's quite good. Yeah, yeah. Good shouts, guy. Let's move on to the next one. We'll just do a couple more. I'm not going to do one about a cup of tea because I don't drink it. I only learned to make tea for my wife. But even I know that you take the tea bag out before you put in the milk.
Yeah, of course you do.
Which only meant... I've seen somebody do it. You know, there's always like footage of someone... You know, one of those shows where they're doing compo face because like their roof's falling in and their landlord's fucked them over. And then you always see someone pour milk on top of a tea bag. And even I look at
it,
I'm like, that look... Because it looks like pond water when something's floating in it. It looks like the rivers in Kent, you know, where like when it would go down, there was a TV and like a shopping trolley.
I don't take the tea bag out for milk in it. My method is tea bag in, sugar, hot water, and then put the milk on it and then take the tea bag out.
I think that's weird. I think the tea bag comes out, then you adjust the milk. Because when you take the tea bag out, the level drops,
yeah.
So you need to know what that, you know, you've got to take into account displacement.
I like milky tea though, so.
So does my wife. I've only learnt to make it, you know, like I know that like the sweetener or the sugar has to go in at the bottom because she wants it to melt. Like I know how to make tea very specifically for my wife because I've had maybe one cup of tea in my life.
I probably haven't even had one cup of tea.
Yeah, because it's shit.
I love it. Mum used to give me it when I was like 1 year. It was like my first drink other than like normal
breast milk.
Yeah. just
you
a
can
cup
say
of tea.
Breast milk.
Yeah.
It's fine. All right. Well, that actually was weirdly slightly controversial. Right. Moving on to the last one. This is from Daniel Gordon. He said, you can choose four people to fight in a massive brawl. Who do you choose and who would win? This is an amazing question. This is like the Fight Club question where they're just like, who would you fight from history?
Am I hench in this world? Can I actually beat these people off in this world?
Because
I can't beat anyone up.
No, I think you have to take into account the fact that like you are who you are.
Oh. Yeah, but you don't have to pick you to fight these four people. It's just
picking four people to fight, right? No.
Oh, I was assuming that I was involved in the fight, to be honest with you. I thought it was me versus four people, but now you mention it, he hasn't actually specified that.
So
but I just think, if these four people are there, I'm fighting them.
Well, I prefer if they fought each other and I'll just say like okay. Julius Caesar giving the thumbs down.
Okay, so who are your four people then, if you're just choosing four people to
anyone
fight
each
ever. Other? Yeah, anyone ever.
Unai Emery
and like what and like The Rock and like Genghis Khan.
the three biggest blokes in the world.
Just to kick the shit out of Unai Emery. He'd be dead so quickly though, wouldn't even be satisfied.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a hard people I know. I don't really hate anyone.
It doesn't have to be people you know.
Because so many
people. Funny. Yeah, I know, it's difficult, right? I mean, like the temptation is to put someone like Trump in here and then put like, The Rock in or something.
Yeah.
But do you want to see someone get beaten up, or do you want to see a good fight? Because you could.
I'm not particular.
Because you could easily put someone in, like, as you say, Trump, who probably couldn't, like, or Boris Johnson, or whatever, something like that. Or you could put in people who are known for having skills, like Jackie Chan versus The Rock. Would Ooh. Be an interesting
I'd
fight.
Watch that. I mean, it had to be peak Jackie Chan, though.
Oh
like,
yeah,
so not like
I'm imagining
Jackie
all
Chan.
These people at their peak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's got to be physical peak.
Like
so
a
it's got to be
like Bruce Lee.
Yeah, like Bruce Lee, Muhammad Ali, and then like and
Conor
like
McGregor.
Conor McGregor, and then I don't know, like Sugar Ray or something. Like I don't know, that'd be pretty good. Like, but okay, let's simplify this then. You have to fight somebody. You can fight one historical person, and then you can fight one person in your life. Who's the person in your life and who's the historical person? It doesn't have to be someone you hate. It could just be someone who you think maybe you could beat or someone who would be funny to fight. You know, like maybe you think it'd be fun to like fight. Who's a person? McCubbin. That would be very funny. That'd objectively be hilarious.
I mean, I've been like watching World War II stuff recently.
Okay.
And I feel like it's not going to the top, but it's going to one under. And I think I have an advantage.
Goebbels.
Yeah. Goebbels, he's got a weird
it's
leg.
It's a great shot. He's got a weird leg.
So, You could. I think people could just run around rings around him.
How am I meant to follow
Goebbels,
that up?
I'm not going to the top. Okay, now you brought the Nazis into it. I guess I'd probably go Nazi too, but I go Heydrich. I would really like to fight Heydrich. Like, because I think he's a pussy. Like, I mean, I know
that,
like...
Mengele fled.
Nah, but he's... There's no point. Like, he knows he'd get the shit kicked out of him. Whereas the thing about Heydrich is, like... To me, I think, like, two of the people I admire most in history are, like, Josef Gabczyk and Jan Kubisch, who assassinated Heydrich. And they ended up getting killed. And I just think they're, like, two heroes of the war that nobody really knows about. But Heydrich was genuinely, I think even including Hitler and Goebbels, I think Heydrich was probably the worst of all the
most
Nazis.
Evil.
Yeah, I genuinely think he was probably he's the most evil, the most evil man there. And he was just such an appalling scumbag that, and he's like, he's so Nazi as well. Like, he's genuinely like tall and blonde and like, or, I don't know, I just want to fight him. I just would love to kick the shit out of him. Like, fortunately, he had a really painful death. So, like, there are bonuses. But, I don't know, like, he's definitely somebody who'd be on my shit list. And Mugabe. I'd fight Mugabe. Like, just a scumbag. Like, came into Zimbabwe and everybody was so optimistic because, you know, like, finally colonial white rule was over. And it was going to be a time when, like, Zimbabwe could open up and basically move forward. And instead, what he did was fuck over literally everybody. Like, make people complicit in his crimes. Like, really targeted the white population, but in doing so promised the black population things he could not deliver. And so ultimately it wasn't that he just hurt one particular group, he hurt the entire country for his own personal gain. Scumbag. And also I would beat his ass. Like, I would absolutely destroy Mugabe.
Who's the Brazilian president at the moment? Bolsonaro.
Yeah
of today's characters. Yeah.
Oh, that's solid.
I mean, didn't he survive getting shot or stabbed or something, so he might be pretty hard.
Like Rasputin. Or fight Rasputin, just because I reckon, like, I bet all the stories were nonsense. You just have him.
Well, I mean...
Big guy, big penis.
Well, I mean, you say that about historical characters, but big guys then are just like small guys now, right?
I think Rasputin was legit like 6'5". Wow. He's got very piercing eyes.
Yeah, even
as
Napoleon
well.
Was like 5'8". Apparently, or like 5'6".
Yeah, Napoleon for the time was tall, actually. Like, he's just, now he's like below average.
Pontius Pilate.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, I'm thinking of musicians now.
Especially with all the technology these days, so I went back then.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris Brown, that'd be pretty good. I think he'd beat the shit out of me, but it'd be pretty good to get one over him.
If you beat up Chris Brown, you would become a hero. Global hero.
In fact, if we went back to the original question of four people.
Okay.
You'd put Chris Brown in there. And then surround them with Jackie Chan,
Unai Emery, Bruce Lee, Muhammad Ali.
Just Chris Brown and three people you know can fight.
Because then you'll get the pleasure of seeing Bruce Lee and Muhammad Ali destroy these two dicks. And then at the end, they fight each other. Like, which would be... So you'd get like the pleasure of like a battering and a real fight.
No, but what if three of them gang up on one strong one?
I don't think Bruce... No one... I think Bruce Lee and Muhammad Ali would be too... like proud to team up
and no one's going on Chris Brown's side.
Like, there's no way that Muhammad Ali is going to say, yeah, I would team up with Unai Emery to take down Bruce Lee. He'd be like, I'm going to knock Bruce Lee out.
Morrissey, there you go, another one.
Morrissey,
that's a shout.
I mean, the Smiths are incredible, but he's an absolute knob.
Throw a steak at him. Just hit him with, like, make nunchucks out of sausages. just knock him out. He is a scumbag. Anyway, I really enjoyed that. Lots of people I'd fight from history, essentially.
Yeah, I don't think I'd win any. Maybe Goebbels.
Maybe McCubbin.
Oh, McCubbin versus Goebbels, who would win?
McCubbin, he's got God on his side. He's got righteousness on his side. And I think McCubbin, I reckon McCubbin, if you made him angry enough, would be truly furious. Whereas Goebbels would just be like, it's just cowardly.
Limping about.
He's just going to proper, Hitler, propaganda merchant. He's got nothing. He'd have really good posters before the fight, but nothing. He'd have nothing to back it up
all
in
talk.
The ring.
It's all talk, no...
Good times. So that's our show for this week. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure that you subscribe to Sunday Vibes Extra Time. Of course, we've got a couple more episodes left of this show, but we will be continuing over there in the long run. Thank you very much to George and Mike Atkins for joining me.
No problem.
And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Unai out.